Our second case this morning is United States against Polk. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of this court, may I please escort. In this case, the military judge abused his discretion when he improperly admitted the prosecution Exhibit 16, a green detoxification drink. Both through testimony and the bottle as admitted, the government was able to get a great deal of unfairly prejudicial information in front of the members about appellants. First, the bottle was not accurate as admitted. It did not describe what Airman Sweeney had seen appellant with in her room. The government and the military judge entered this bottle into evidence with the label attached to it, wherein Airman Sweeney had never seen appellant with one of these bottles that had the label on it. Now, the label contained prejudicial language on it, such as it stated that the drink was fast-acting, formulated for people with large body masses and extreme strength. It was also called Protox.
How is that prejudicial?
Well, Your Honor,
it's fast-acting for what? It's for big people, so what?
Yes, Your Honor, and I don't think it totally tips the scale, but when you look at it in the essence of what's going on in this court is that we have a positive urinalysis, and the government's offering this for the purpose of showing that she's used this drink to somehow...
How do you deal with the... Let's say you're correct on all the errors. You run the board.
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you deal with the stipulation?
Well, certainly the defense did stipulate to certain aspects of this.
Such as the accuracy of the report and the fact that it can contain cocaine. And she didn't put on an innocent ingestion defense, did she?
She did not put on an innocent digestion.
So how is the, assuming error, do you have prejudice?
I think even with the stipulation of fact, Your Honor, it was still error as admitted for this bottle. To detail this type of stuff. In addition,
the bottle hadn't had the label on it, would have been error?
No, Your Honor. Okay.
So your complaint is the label.
Correct.
Okay.
The label is the first prong.
My question went to prejudice. I said, I give you error, assuming error on all the issues.
Correct, Your Honor.
How was your appellant prejudiced in light of the stipulation?
Well, in addition, we have testimony, which is also prejudice, and that came from Detective West, which Airman Sweeney had said that she got these bottles from her brother. They cost around $50, but what we didn't have from Airman Sweeney was saying that these bottles came from Planet K, which is considered an off-limits establishment, and the government turned around in their argument and argued that this is a smoke shop slash head shop, a place where you buy drug paraphernalia.
Was she charged with entering an off-limits establishment?
She was not, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, certainly it's another way of the government to backdoor this information, negative information, against appellant in.
Was there an objection? Was there an objection to the Planet K testimony?
There was an objection to the bottle.
There was an objection to the bottle.
Correct.
Right. But was there an objection to that piece of testimony?
Appellant made brief argument during that original objection about where the bottle came from. She didn't specifically articulate to the best that it could have been, but it was talked about in that Article 39A session with regard to that bottle, Your Honor. The only thing that Airman Sweeney testified knowing about this bottle was the general description of it, that it looked like a milk bottle, that it was had a green cap, that she actually tasted it, and it tasted like sour apple. Again, there was no reason to admit this evidence, as it was not helpful to the members at all.
Well,
as
doesn't that cut against prejudice? I mean, for the same reason that it wasn't necessarily helpful to the members or relevant, how does it prejudice your client in light of the other evidence in the case? And I had thought that the issue was not that they talked about it, but that it was used for demonstrative purposes when it wasn't actually that, and that they didn't give the instruction. right? But from everything that you've said, don't you think it would be clear to the members that this was not, in fact, the bottle that was actually discussed by the roommate?
There was some testimony saying that, you know, this is a replica, it's a representative example of the military.
And there was testimony from the officer that the bottle was one that they had gone and purchased.
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
Right, there was no testimony that the appellant had gone and purchased it.
Correct, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. There was no testimony that this actually came from an appellant's room or her possession or anything of that nature. The problem with that is that the military judge never gave specific instructions as he was required to do.
Well, fine. I'll agree with you. That was error. They should have done that. But how was there any likelihood that the members were confused as to what bottle this actually was? How is there any prejudice on that issue, let alone prejudice to the substantial, you know, to the substantial rights of the appellant in this case? I mean,
we don't necessarily have any way of knowing what was in the juror's mind, but what we do know is that they were allowed to take that back into the deliberation room with them, potentially as actual evidence. Much different, being illustrative evidence in this case is much different than such as it would have been demonstrative evidence, whereas it admitted as maybe an appellate exhibit, such as a chart or a diagram of crime scene, Your Honor. In this case, the bottle was allowed to go back into the deliberation room with the members for them to view that.
Counsel, let's try it this way. Let's assume that the members, looking at that bottle, and in the absence of instructions, proceeded to decide the case with the understanding that the accused, the appellant now, used that exact same bottle or a replica material that was in a similar, identical bottle in this case. How does that affect the manner in which they approach the evidence in this case? That is, which evidence would they be more or less likely to believe as a result of having that before them without instructions?
Certainly, Your Honor. I mean, if you balance that against the other evidence the government had in this case, looking at, they had positive urinalysis. You had factors such as her delaying in reporting, which can be argued that it wasn't necessarily a delay in reporting. Certainly, there's factors that weigh in favor of the government. This is just one small factor that cuts an appellant's favor as far as error and prejudice to her getting a fair trial.
Well, it's error, but what factors in the evidence that were before the members would have raised a reasonable doubt, or what aspect of the cross-examination undercut reasonable doubt? In other words, what was at issue in this case in which the consideration of that bottle in the deliberation room would have made a difference?
Well, the defense, what appeared to be the defense theory of the case was knowing, whether or not they made the government showed knowing use of cocaine. Certainly having this bottle back in the room, labeled, which the detective labeled as a flushing agent, and the expert in turn did talk about the flushing agent too, which we had no testimony, from Airman Sweeney saying that that's what the appellant said this bottle was for, or what she used it for. In the minds of the members back there, balanced against all this evidence, they had to say that she had this flushing agent that she was drinking, certainly would create prejudice that they considered, of course she used drugs, why else would she be using this flushing agent? She would be attempting to get the drugs out of her system by using it.
Was the admission of the testimony by the expert error in this case? And have you raised that as an error in this case?
We did not raise that as an error.
So that testimony would have come in anyway. That is, the members would have had before them evidence in the case of the potential that a flushing agent was used in this case. So it wasn't the introduction of the bottle itself and the presence of the bottle in the deliberation of the room that introduced the evidence, and that was the sole evidence. There was independent evidence that the members could consider as to a flushing agent. That is, the testimony that something was consumed and the testimony of the expert as to what the impact would have been.
Without the bottle, without how Airman Sweeney had testified to it, as they admitted it, the expert wouldn't have necessarily been able to relate back in his testimony of what a flushing agent was. It's arguable, but what the expert was testifying to was about what was going to be put on as far as that bottle of flushing agent or the detoxification drink, Your Honor.
Did the defense make that argument at trial, that the expert's testimony was impermissible because the only basis for the testimony would have been the bottle itself?
They did not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Now, there doesn't appear to be any cases on point in this honorable court, but with illustrative evidence or this doctrine of similar physical evidence. But the Air Force Court did cite one case, which was Carson versus Polly out of the Fifth Circuit, which it disfavored sending back these type of illustrative aids to the jury room. And the rationale is it's the potential to smuggle argument by counsel back into that jury deliberation room. Another example, a hypothetical in this situation would be comparable to, is if, say, that they had seen an appellant with a green leafy substance and in turn had the detective go out and buy a package of the drug Spice somewhere and then admit that as evidence that she had been using Spice. Very similar in this case. And again, it just comes back to this.
Well, but there's no issue as to whether she was using it. She stipulated to that.
Correct, Your Honor.
So, you know, there can't be any prejudice on that. She chose to she and her counsels chose to stipulate to the presence of the metabolite in her urine.
Correct, Your Honor.
And she, you know, she of course doesn't have to do anything, but she elected not to put on an innocent objection defense. So where does that leave us with regard to prejudice?
Well, as we move along, Your Honor, again, this court granted on the cumulative error doctrine, and if you look at all the errors in this case, I mean, this is just one small factor that weighed into this.
You want to move on to your next error then?
Yes, Your Honor. If I could address the issue with the comment on appellant's right to remain silent. And the defense notes, I mean, this is one very small error, but what took place there is that the detective... The government elicited from Detective West that what was appellant's reaction when you were confronted with the positive urine analysis results. Now, she did give certain response to her emotions, which and demeanor, which would be okay. She said she was lackadaisical, didn't seem to care, but she said specifically she said nothing whatsoever, which would appear to be a comment on her right to remain silent at that point. Now, the defense made an argument. They didn't argue those words specifically, but they did relate back to the issue of that her demeanor when she was confronted with those positive results. If I may move on to the cumulative error doctrine, Your Honor.
Yes.
Under that that doctrine, the combined effect of all the errors in this case warrants the power to reverse appellant's conviction and set aside the sentence. In this case, we have other issues, such as the government labeling appellant's brother as a drug dealer, which...
Did we grant on that?
You did not grant on that, Your Honor, no. And I was only addressing it under the cumulative error doctrine.
Okay.
Admission of the detoxification drink, the judge's failure to instruct on that detoxification drink and how the members were supposed to interpret that or use that. The judge also, and again, this all comes under the cumulative error, the judge did instruct on drinking large amounts of water to the members, and therefore all of these errors had an effect and had a prejudicial effect on appellant in this case. If Your Honor's have any more questions, I can reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
We'll have an opportunity on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
May it please the Court, I am Major Nicole Wishart, and I, along with Colonel Don Christensen, represent the United States in this matter. The military judge did not abuse his discretion when admitting Prosecution Exhibit 16, the green detoxification drink, into evidence.
So the members needed something to understand these are people in the military and they need an example to understand what a bottle is and what the color green is?
It was certainly used as an illustrative device for Amron Sweeney's testimony.
The members wouldn't have understood what a bottle was or what the color green was absent this helpful thing with a label on it that nobody testified existed in the real situation.
I think so long as it wasn't undue cumulative evidence or prejudicial, that it was sufficiently to meet the relevant standard to come in under.
And there was no instruction, and it's the government's position that this was A, necessary so that members could understand what the color green was and what a bottle is, and you would say there was no instruction. You agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And both sides cite to the same source for the argument that the law requires an instruction.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor.
So you're saying the law does not require an instruction?
Yes, Your Honor. Under RCM 920, the illustrative evidence instruction is not one of the required instructions. And so when you look at the evidence and the way that this evidence was used in this court member, in this court martial, it was not a required instruction. It was certainly clear by the way that this evidence was used that there would be no confusion as to its limited purpose.
Which goes to prejudice and not to whether it was properly admitted. Were the members told that this was not the actual bottle?
Through testimony.
But not from the judge?
Not from the judge, Your Honor.
What about the label?
Your Honor,
didn't trial counsel say, fine, it's okay with us if you take off the label?
Absolutely, Your
Honor. The judge said, nah, leave it on.
There were two discussions about the label. The label, whether it was included or not, and trial counsel was amenable to do whatever the judge and the defense counsel wanted to do. There was no objection at that point to maintaining the label on the sample. And the label itself was consistent with Airman Sweeney's very detailed testimony about the instructions and appellant's admissions for how she used the detoxification drink. Specifically, there's testimony about appellant's admissions that she told Airman Sweeney, you drink the bottle, and this was a 20-ounce bottle to keep in mind. You drink the bottle, you fill it up with water, and then you drink it again. And this is in the joint appendix at 62 to 63.
Right, but this was about the judge's question was about the label.
Yes,
was there any testimony that there was a label on the bottle?
There's testimony that when asked by trial counsel to Airman Sweeney, is this a representative example of the bottle you saw appellant consume and that were in your refrigerator? She said it looks just the same minus the label. So the testimony is clear that the label was removed, which is further consciousness of guilt evidence that appellant would not want to necessarily portray to the world that she was using these drinks to cleanse herself from illegal toxins such as cocaine. Again, the objection at trial was to relevancy for the bottle itself.
Did the government make that argument at trial?
I'm sorry.
Did the government make that argument at trial that the label was removed and that proved consciousness of guilt?
I cannot say.
Is there anything in the record? Is there anything in the record that would allow us to consider that at this point as a basis for leaving the label on, label off, what it meant?
I think, by virtue of Airman Sweeney's testimony, that would be a finding of fact for the court members to determine. And so, when you're looking at the threshold screen that the military judge has to do to admit whether to admit or exclude.
Did the military judge say anything about the label on or off because this reflects consciousness of guilt? Did the military judge give any instructions in that regard regarding consciousness of guilt? Thank you.
No, Your Honor.
And why would it reflect consciousness of guilt if she just blabbed to Sweeney everything that was on the label, which seems to be the government's contention?
I think that's an issue to have been fairly considered by the members. And the military judge specifically instructed not on the label, the removal or not, because, again, this wasn't an issue at trial. There was discussion from the trial counsel, should I remove it, should I not, what's better? There was no objection. So looking at the...
Well, that's not my question. My question, the government now seems to be arguing that the removal of the label when she allegedly drank the stuff indicated a consciousness of guilt. But then earlier you said, well, the label is fine because it just tracks what she told Sweeney. Well, so How does that add any consciousness of guilt if she just blabbed the whole thing to Sweeney anyhow?
That would be a reasonable inference as well, but I think the key as far as consciousness of guilt evidence and what's specifically instructed by members is whether these behaviors happened, whether they infer or indicate consciousness of guilt is for the members to decide. And what significance, if any, should attach is also for the members to
decide. But you've just admitted, I think, that the argument wasn't made, was it? Was the consciousness of guilt argument made in relation to the label at trial?
I do not recall definitively whether that was argued at trial.
Thank you.
It was certainly not confusing the members as to the...
Well, it wouldn't have confused the members if the argument wasn't made.
The label, again, is in the government's position.
Or maybe it didn't. Maybe it didn't confuse them. Maybe it helped them. Maybe now that they saw the label, they came to their own conclusion of, oh, if she took off, just like we've had the discussion here, if she took off the label, she must have been trying to hide something.
Right. That is.
Well, if the members made that inference and it wasn't instructed upon by the judge, wasn't argued by counsel, and wasn't placed into evidence for that purpose, was that permissible?
Well, I think when you talk about it wasn't instructed upon, the military judge did instruct on consciousness of guilt and circumstantial evidence.
As a general matter, did the judge instruct that the presence or absence of the label demonstrated piece of evidence which they could consider for consciousness of guilt?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Why is it that the government spent so much time and effort on this green bottle? I mean, you had a stipulation. They had a stipulation of fact. They had the evidence that she didn't take the urinalysis for a whole day and didn't return when she was supposed to return. They had other testimony from her roommate. On the one hand, it seems unimportant, which cuts against her being prejudiced, but obviously the government felt it was important for some reason, which cuts towards prejudice. So explain to me what the purpose of this evidence was.
Your Honor,
it was either necessary to the government's case, in which case, you know, that makes the appellant's job of showing prejudice easier, or it wasn't necessary, and then the question is, why?
Your Honor, I think that in every court-martial, the government, because they bear the burden, they are required to put their absolute best case on. And wrongfulness is...
But, I mean, best case doesn't mean every piece of possible thing that you can put in. I mean, that's often the worst case. That's where most of the problems that we see come from.
Your Honor, there is, in the record, defense did not put on evidence. But there is, in the record, 39A sessions that talk about the defense counsel trying to lay the foundation for an excited utterance, that perhaps putting on testimony for unknowing ingestion, and the opening statement, the defense counsel went down a road that one reading the record would suggest maybe something didn't go right for defense during the trial, the witnesses didn't come through or whatnot. So given that context, and given the fact that the government has to show wrongful use, which you need to show that it was a knowing use and you knew of the contraband nature and it was in your system, then it was completely permissible and the government was required to put this type of information in the record, particularly given the context of what they were expecting from the defense.
But didn't the military judge give an instruction as to the permissible inference that finding the metabolized cocaine, they can infer that it was knowing, absent evidence to the contrary?
Yes, Your Honor. There is a permissible legal inference.
And the members were informed of that.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that seems to be exactly what you're saying they were trying to show with the green bottle.
And I think what's important is to remember that the testimony, the Amron Sweeney's testimony, which is really the key of this evidence, is not challenged. It's just the bottle itself that's being challenged.
How would the roommate have been able to just explain to me the government's theory as to how the roommate would have been able to testify about the fact that appellant's brother was a drug dealer, absent its connection to the green bottle and his allegedly purchasing it for her, and because he knew about how it worked?
There's testimony that appellant was admitted to Erin Sweeney that she was out with her brother, got drunk, and messed up, and that's the...
But that's not my question. My question is, absent the tying the green bottle to the brother and the brother's knowledge of what the substance in the green bottle did because he himself was a drug dealer, how would evidence that her brother was a drug dealer have come in? I'm not saying it couldn't have. I'm just asking what's your theory as to how that would have come in.
It would come in as far as opportunity access, you know, knowledge of contraband nature. And the fact that the brother was tied to the bottle, I don't think it bears on the analysis as to whether the bottle itself was relevant. It could have come in. I know that's not, this is a tangential response, but that's also not required for the bottle to come in. In addition, that the exhibit, prosecution exhibit 16, went back into deliberation room is not prohibited. Even the case that defense, that appellant cites in a supplemental citation last week, U.S. v. Cox, does not say that it's prohibited. In fact, there's language that says it's rarely error that taking it back to the deliberation room would be error. And those facts are certainly distinguishable in our case, but nevertheless, they found no clear abuse of discretion.
Can you clarify for me the government's view as to when they became roommates?
The Erin Sweeney and appellant became roommates on March 24th. This came through, and this would have been 2008. It doesn't specifically reference 2008, but based on the context of the testimony, we believe it to be 2008.
And the drug test in question was on March 25th?
Yes, Your Honor. It was actually provided on the 25th.
So the Sweeney testimony that she observed the person drinking the green liquid was with respect to green liquid before March 25th or at a point after March 25th?
The testimony by Erin Sweeney when asked whether she saw her consume the detoxification drink prior to providing your analysis is, I don't recall, I don't remember. But what we have is two admissions that from appellant to Erin Sweeney that make this extremely relevant. One that appellant told Erin Sweeney she went out with her brother, she got drunk, and she messed up, and that whenever she did mess up, her brother bought her these green detoxification drinks to cleanse her system. Then Erin Sweeney states, because we were roommates, we shared a refrigerator, I saw these drinks in our refrigerator multiple times over the 3 to 4 month time that I was roommates with her. And, Your Honor,
you've answered my question. You're welcome to go on your time. I just wanted to make sure whether there's a factual dispute as to the roommate issue between the sides.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, I'm confused. On page 13 of your brief, you say that the following are the elements of the foundation for similar physical evidence. Three, and the court members are instructed that the evidence is not actually connected with the case but is being admitted for illustrative purposes only. But earlier you told me an instruction was not required and there was no error on the judge's part by not giving it. So I guess my question is your brief correct or is your oral argument correct?
My argument is correct, Your Honor, given RCM 920, which identifies certain required instructions, such as affirmative defenses, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and then others that the military judge may, in his discretion, or upon request from the party, which there was none here, additionally instruct.
So you've revised your argument as you prepared for oral argument, often happens.
Your Honor, I think it's not necessarily inconsistent because the third prong there, and this is from the evidentiary treatise here, that the military judge would instruct on it being used for its illustrative purpose. I think the intent there is to make sure that the members aren't confused as to the purpose for which it is being used. Certainly, there's no confusion here as for the purpose for which this bottle itself is being used. And this talks about foundations before the military judge admitting the evidence. It's unlikely that you're going to get an instruction prior to admission to the members. So that's a condition, a prior condition than necessarily.
Is that what the treatise says, that the instruction is supposed to be given at that point?
It says as the third prong that the members would be instructed.
Right. So the anticipation is that the members are given an instruction either in conjunction with or subsequent to the introduction of the evidence. They're not given the instruction in the abstract and then the evidence magically appears.
Yes, Your Honor. And because of the facts of this case, because the trial counsel, Airman Sweeney, Detective West, and trial defense counsel on cross-examined all treated the prosecution exhibit as a representative example because it was absolutely abundantly clear the limited illustrative purpose for this bottle, and because it wasn't requested by defense counsel during the point where the military judge's instructions were provided to counsel prior to review, and when delivered, it was within the military judge's discretion whether this additional instruction on illustrative evidence
is it within discretion, or do we test it for plain error at that point? That is, are all required instructions set forth in the meaningful courts martial, or are there other required instructions that come from case law or logic with respect to specific circumstances? Is that list in the manual an exclusive list?
I believe it's a such as language. 920 RCM 920E, right. It says, in addition to certain required instructions, such as those regarding elements of the offenses charged or special defense.
So it's not an exclusive list.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
But looking to the later part of that language in RCM 920, it says the military judge may also instruct members on other explanations, descriptions, or directions as may be necessary and which are properly requested by a party or for which the military judge is responsible.
So the rule contemplates three categories then. One are the specific instructions listed and as required in the rule. Secondly, there are other required instructions not listed in the rule because the rule is set forth in the form of illustrative examples. Thirdly, they're the instructions on which the judge has discretion as to whether to give. So in the first two categories, there's no discretion. That is, if this falls in to the required instructions, because it, although not being listed as an illustrative matter, is nonetheless required, then the judge has no discretion as to whether to give this or not. I'm not asking to concede that, but in terms of the structure, is that not the structure under which we operate?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Counsel, let's assume that we disagree with you and that we think that all of the issues that were assigned go the appellant's way. Can you explain, in the time that you have left, why there is no prejudice, if, assuming that that's your position?
Yes, Your Honor. When looking at two of the errors are under the plain error analysis and then one abuse of discretion, there are no errors as the government's position. However, even assuming error, there is no prejudice given the overwhelming strength of the government's case. What you had here was a positive urine analysis results, which was explained through a forensic toxicologist, a stipulation of fact wherein the appellant admitted as correct and true and admissible for all purposes that the urine tested was hers, that it was properly handled and processed, and that it accurately reported back the cocaine metabolite in her urine. That was stipulated. That was true. At no point was the urinalysis contested. In addition to that, you have the chain of custody witnesses that came through. In addition to that, you have the legal inference that the members are allowed to use for the wrongfulness. In addition to that, you have all of the admissions that appellant made to Airman Sweeney to take the bottle out of this, and you have an overwhelming case that the prosecution presented that leaves you a firm belief and conviction that appellant was guilty of the offense charged. There are no errors in the three asserted errors here. As such, the cumulative error doctrine does not apply. If there are no further questions, appellant's asserted errors are without merit. The United States respectfully requests this honorable court affirm the findings and sentence as approved by the Air Force Court of Appeals.
Why is the government so keen on holding on to this green bottle? Is this something that the government feels they need to bring into all the your analysis cases?
Your Honor, I can't speak as to what the trial counsel.
You're not giving an inch on the green bottle, and you have overwhelming evidence you have a strong prejudice argument, but boy, you know, you're not even opening the possibility the judge might have had the green bottle wrong. What's the government, what's your concern with this green bottle?
I'm not concerned about the green bottle, Your Honor, and if you...
Does the government not see the possibility of error here?
The government's not going to concede error for the green bottle, again, because the testimony has not been challenged. And the green bottle was just one...
The green bottle with a label on it and all that. So you're sticking to your guns that this green bottle is the way to go.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, we're asking a few extra questions. Let me ask you about the testimonial question and the self-incrimination. Assuming that the defense opened the door by its excited utterance argument to the entire testimony as to what happened when the question was asked, why in the government's view did the defense open the door to a consciousness of guilt argument in addition to that?
Your Honor, is your question why did the defense open the door?
Yeah, and I understand the government's argument that the defense opened the door by raising the excited utterance issue and therefore the witness could describe the entire scene. Assuming the evidence is in to describe the scene, why does the defense question an excited utterance open the door to a consciousness of guilt argument based upon what was not said?
Your Honor, the best way that I can answer that question is to point to the case law that talks to when you have improper comment on an appellant's invocation of rights, and that is just not what we had here, because the demeanor, the response, the lackadaisical, the no response, whatever, is just distinguishable from all the cases that...
I understand that. I understand that's why the government's arguing that the evidence, there was no error in permitting the full answer to the question. Mm-hmm. My question is, why was the prosecution allowed to go beyond that and argue that in addition, it was not simply a rebuttal to the excited utterance argument, but it was affirmative proof in the government's case that there was a demonstration of consciousness of guilt?
My answer to that, Your Honor, would be that that comment on demeanor would be fair comment.
Thank you. We have got your answer. Thank you very much for your presentation today.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Your Honor, while the defense stipulated in this case to the fact that there was cocaine in the appellant's system, they did not stipulate to the knowing use of this cocaine. They did not stipulate, and the stipulation did not equate to a conviction. What's important to point out is the government...
Well, what do you do with a permissive inference, then, that is in the law and that the judge gave to the members, that the presence of drugs in a person's system, they can presume that it was knowing, unless there's evidence to the contrary, which your client decided not to do?
There certainly is that instruction, permissive inference instruction. But when you couple that with the inappropriate evidence that the government admitted, it was the nail in the coffin for the appellant in this case. They entered this evidence to show conscious of guilt that she knowingly uses cocaine.
But what about the other consciousness of guilt evidence? What about the failure to give a urine sample despite drinking copious amounts of water and staying there for hours in the afternoon? What about the failing to return at 6:30 in the morning when she was supposed to? I mean, that was also consciousness of guilt evidence, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor. Certainly that does cut against the appellant in this case. However, for that first year analysis, the appellant did provide a urine specimen. It was just simply not enough. She was ordered to report the next day, and she was late reporting the next day. There was testimony given that she was in training, and perhaps maybe the training was the reason why she was late, fear of being washed back in training. But certainly the argument could be made that those were consciousness of guilt as well, Your Honor. And to address the prejudice in this case, the government had noted that the evidence was overwhelming against appellant in this case, which would lead appellant to question why the admission of this green intoxication drink is relevant, or why the government would need to do that. The prejudice, again, lies in the fact that this could have been the tipping point for the members back in the deliberation room. There could have been members back there that were questionable of their analysis program, and to see this type of evidence could have been what pushed them over the edge. And if I may briefly conclude, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. Accordingly, based on the accumulation of errors in this case, to include labeling appellants, the addition of the detoxification drink, the military's subsequent failure to give a limiting instruction, and the comment on appellant's right to remain silent, appellant respectfully asks that this court set aside the findings and sentence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. The court will stand in recess pending further order of the court.